Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
I wish I had a dollar for every time that I've heard somebody say, life is unfair. I was reminded of that yesterday. At the end of our mealtime, I was standing just outside the door, and there were two ladies who were standing out there with me. One of those two ladies took a telephone call. Debbie Lubash is her name. L-U-B-A-S-H, Debbie. For 18 months, she'd been a caregiver for her husband. Never left his side. Yesterday, she left his side. And as we were standing out there near the door, she took a call reporting to her that he had died. She was crushed, obviously. Started crying in disbelief. She had been by his side all the time for 18 months. But the one time she left his side, he died. Why? Why then, when she made this choice to come to a grief workshop because she knew of what was inevitably going to be experienced by her at some point in time, why? Why then? Please keep Debbie in your prayers. She lives here in your community. She reported to me that she really had no church affiliation. She was here with a friend. But I would suggest to you that life is not just unfair. I'd go a step further. Sometimes life is cruel, brutal. I suggest to you that sometimes life bites. And sometimes it bites so hard, it takes a chunk of your heart out. And we're stressed beyond belief. We become worried like we've never been worried before and feel so weak because the burden is so heavy. And we struggle with the feeling of being overwhelmed. In 1989, my family, we went on Thanksgiving weekend to visit with my parents and my wife's parents, who lived in Dover and New Philadelphia, Ohio, respectively, about an hour south of Cleveland, Ohio. We decided to only come back home late Saturday night. That's the problem with a preacher week ending. You have to get back for Sunday morning. So we stayed as late as possible. It was about 50 to 55 minutes away from our house. We were driving back home. We were about maybe 3 miles from where we lived. We were driving north. There was an elderly couple who had come to Hartville, Ohio for a wedding. He was a retired Mennonite preacher. Their family name was Burford. As we were driving north that Saturday night, and they were driving east that Saturday night, he missed the stop sign just outside of Hartville. And I had the right of way to go through that intersection north. Our 1985 Pontiac Bonneville hit their 1970-something powder blue Ford Pinto. And I can see that Pinto in my mind right now as clearly as I did that night. We were going 45 miles an hour. A little later after that accident, Eileen Burford died. My wife and I had to go to the hospital. She was injured and on crutches for a while. I was banged up a little bit, but not really nearly as bad as my wife. And obviously not nearly as injured as Eileen Burford was that night. I hated the next morning sitting my children down and explaining to them that the car that they were in, that their father was driving, and a car that they were sitting in the back seat, was the car that hit their car that resulted in Mrs. Burford's death. That had to be the hardest time for me as a parent up to that point in my life. I was a mess, obviously. Wasn't able to preach the next morning, but I was overwhelmed. I went to Mrs. Burford's memorial service that was conducted at a large Mennonite church in Hartville, Ohio, the same church where they had attended that wedding that night. And it was packed because everybody knew the Burfords. Any Mennonite in eastern Ohio, western Pennsylvania, or West Virginia would have known the Burford family. He was a well-known retired Mennonite preacher. That church house was packed. I was sitting about halfway back in the middle of the auditorium. And when Mr. Burford got up and spoke at his wife's memorial service, he spotted me and he called me out by name and he asked me to stand. And then he said, "I want to thank you for helping get my wife to heaven." I didn't know how to respond. I was overwhelmed. How do you respond to an occasion like that? When our daughter was 10 years old, our youngest daughter, she was diagnosed with a neurological condition. She had a constriction or a restriction in a cerebral aqueduct that was causing her brain to be pushed up against her skull. She was pretty much asymptomatic as far as that condition was concerned, but very fortunately, because of a nurse at camp at Northeastern Ohio Christian Youth Camp, it was suggested to us that maybe we take her to a neurology doctor. So there was a surgery that was done, and that neurological surgeon said, "Really, this is pretty much a routine surgery and it shouldn't be a problem. We'll install a shunt in your daughter's head and we'll run a tube down to her stomach, and then that valve will register the pressure in her brain and make sure that things are taken care of." And we thought things were fine, but 30 days after surgery, in a post-op visit, we found out things were not okay. As a matter of fact, things were bad, really bad, because she had developed cerebral bleeding, bilateral subdural hematomas, it was called, bleeding in both sides of her brain. See, what had happened was, while she had had that condition, that restriction or constriction in that cerebral aqueduct, her brain was being pushed up against her skull. Well, when they went in there and drilled a hole in her head and began to relieve that pressure, then the brain came away from the skull, and there was bleeding then that accumulated between the brain and the skull. And now her brain is being pushed down because of all that bleeding. We ended up at Rainbow Baby and Children's Hospital, a part of the University Hospitals of Cleveland in Cleveland, Ohio, a renowned children's hospital. There at that hospital, there was the one and only one pediatric neurosurgeon between Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Detroit, Michigan. A densely populated part of our country, but there was only one pediatric neurosurgeon there. I did not even know that breed existed, a specialty within a specialty. We went to see Dr. Mapstone. Dr. Mapstone then performed at University Hospitals of Cleveland 4 brain surgeries on our daughter after she had already had one. During the 33 days that she was in the hospital there, it was a grueling experience. I remember one day, Dr. Mapstone coming into the PICU, the pediatric intensive care unit. And I don't remember what else he said in that visit, but this one thing is what I remember him saying. He said, "Neurosurgeons are often the bearers of bad news." In reflecting about that, I got to thinking he must have been preparing us for what he thought was going to be the worst. She was in a comatose-like state. She was not responding to any audible stimuli or physical stimuli. She was just out of it. She had 5 brain surgeries during that summer total. And I remember between maybe the second and the third one, when we were in the Cleveland, Ohio hospital, leaving her in a pre-op room and walking down a hallway to the family waiting room. And I remember, as my wife and I were both crying, I remember her saying, "I never want to walk down this hallway again." And sure enough, within 48 hours, we were walking down that hallway again. I couldn't believe what we were experiencing. We had a loving church family that was very supportive. My wife was by her side all of those 33 days in the hospital. One day, my wife was sitting in her room by her bedside after they had finally released her out of pediatric intensive care, but she was still in a comatose-like state. One day, my wife bit into a raw carrot. You know the crunching sound when you bite into that carrot and you chew it? And then we heard these words, "What is that noise?" And that was our daughter coming back to us. We knew she was coming back to us. But there was another problem. As she came back to us, she had to be taught to walk again. She had to be taught to feed herself again. She had months and months and months of physical and occupational therapy. If you were to see her today, you wouldn't imagine her having been through that kind of trauma when she was 10 years old. She's the church secretary at the Villa Rica Church of Christ, about 40 miles west of Atlanta. She has 3 daughters and a husband who's a deacon there in that church. Praise the Lord. But that was an overwhelming experience. When my wife was in her early 50s, she was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. I did not know really anything about Parkinson's disease except the tremors. And she didn't have those. There's probably a good dozen different, if you do your research on this, different kinds of symptoms of somebody who might be a Parkinson's patient. She had pretty much all of them except the tremors. The neurology doctor said her brain in the MRI was significantly discolored. That was the 2 words he used to describe her brain, significantly discolored. For 8.5 years, I watched her and cared for her as she deteriorated. And she lost the ability to get up out of the chair. And she lost the ability to walk by herself. She fell, sometimes even using a walker. She lost the ability to talk. She lost the ability to eat. I was overwhelmed. There were times during that caregiving experience of 8.5 years, I thought I was going to snap. There were times that I left her presence in the hospital bed in our house, and I would go to the bathroom, and with tears streaming down my face, I would say a three-word prayer. Lord, help me. That's all I knew to say. I couldn't put any other words into any prayer, but Lord, help me. Then on Christmas morning of 2013 at 9:40 in the morning, it happened. With me on her right side and her firstborn child on her left, she breathed her last breath. Life isn't just unfair. Sometimes life is cruel, brutal, callous. Sometimes life bites. We human beings live in a fallen world, and in that fallen world, there are things that happen. And there's a lot of collateral damage that occurs because we live in a fallen world. And we have a lot of questions, and we have a lot of feelings, and we experience all kinds of different stress because of all kinds of different circumstances. What should we do when we're overwhelmed? Let me suggest that we go to Psalm 31. In Psalm 31, I'm not sure when this was in David's life. You know, there were times in David's life when he lived a charmed life. He really did. But then there were times in his life when he was treated not just unfairly, but cruelly. I mean, was Psalm 31 written whenever Saul was after him in that jealous rage? Was it when his own son Absalom turned his back on him? Was it when he plunged into sin with Bathsheba? When was this? I don't know exactly when this was, but here's what I know about Psalm 31. It was written at a time in David's life when there is no question but that he was overwhelmed by what he was experiencing, and this is why I know that. Begin at verse 9 and notice with me. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief. Yes, my soul and my body, for my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity, and my bones waste away. I am a reproach among all my enemies, but especially among my neighbors, and I am repulsive to my acquaintances. Those who see me outside flee from me. I am forgotten like a dead man, out of mind. I am like a broken vessel. For I hear the slander of many. Fear is on every side. While they take counsel together against me, they scheme to take away my life. Is there any doubt in your mind but that David, the man after God's own heart, the shepherd boy, the king, he's overwhelmed in his life now? How in the world did he ever survive whatever in the world he was going through? But I'm telling you what, when you say your bones waste away, and when you talk about your neighbors viewing you repulsively, like you're a forgotten person, like a dead man out of mind, and you're like a broken vessel, you're in big trouble. You're overwhelmed with what you're experiencing in your life. What should we do when we're overwhelmed? Well, I think it's good for us to remember exactly what that kind of life experience is about. It's about being submerged. That's a synonym. I never have been able to find a really good definition of the word overwhelmed, but the synonyms submerge and crush, those two synonyms are pretty descriptive of what it's like. And there are times in our life, sometimes it's just because we're at the wrong place at the wrong time. Sometimes because of the fault of somebody else. Sometimes maybe because of our own fault. And sometimes for reasons that we will never know this side of eternity. And reasons that won't matter on the other side. We find ourselves overwhelmed. What should we do? David gives us, I think, a great plan. Here's the game plan for victory over being overwhelmed. Number one, trust God. Notice here in this psalm how there is such an emphasis on that. The very first verse that Graham read says, "In you, O Lord, I put my trust." Then drop down a little bit later. Look at verse 6. "I have hated those who regard useless idols, but I trust in the Lord." And then look a little bit later in verse 14. "But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies." And then there is that phrase that most commonly is associated with Jesus on the cross, but is here in Psalm 31. Look at it there in verse 5. It's a descriptive of what trust is. "Into your hand I commit my spirit." You know, when you take a check to the bank and you deposit it, it's an entrustment. When you take your children and you hand them over to the school system or to some sort of child care, or you find a really great teenager at church that you could pay off for taking your kids for a while so you can take your wife out for an evening, that's an entrustment. By the way, those of you who are younger parents, let me highly recommend another approach. I love young ladies at church who do babysitting, but there are some grandparents that are such an easy take, they will pay you for taking care of your children. That's the first option. But that's an entrustment. You're turning them over to their care. Probably the most familiar passage in Proverbs is the one about trust. Trust in the Lord. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. "Trust in the Lord with all of your heart." Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. "And do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths." That passage tells us what we ought to do. Trust. Number two, in whom we ought to trust. Trust in the Lord. How we ought to do that. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Hold nothing back. And then it explains what that means. Do not trust your own heart. Do not trust your own thoughts. Lean upon him. He knows what you don't know. He understands what you do not understand. He sees what you do not see. Trust the Lord. Listen to his direction and his word. Submit to his call to follow his way. Sometimes, though, that's not always easy. Because sometimes things are not like we think they ought to be. So we struggle with trust. I try to walk about 3 miles every day. I miss a day or two once in a while. This morning I was out walking and I decided in the sparsely populated county that you live in, there's nobody out driving before 7 o'clock. It was 10 till 7 this morning when I met my first truck on the road. And I always walk toward the traffic, of course. And at 10 till 7, when I was just about finished with my walk, here comes a truck. I had no clue who was behind the steering wheel of that truck. So I made it a point to go much farther left than I had been walking because he was driving toward me. You know, when you get behind the wheel of a car, you're trusting a lot of people that you don't know, have never met, and don't know what they're doing while they're behind the wheel of that car. But you trust. In our lives daily, we trust in different ways. The most important trust is to trust in the Lord. Sometimes that is hard. I'm a big fan of a young lady who sings faith-based songs. Her name's Lauren Daigle. One of the songs that she sings, I want to read you a portion of the lyrics. This song is called Trust in You. When you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give answers as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you. Miss Lauren's got it right. We just need to keep trusting, even when things are not happening like we think or expect them to happen. Trust. When you're overwhelmed, trust in the Lord. Number two, when you're overwhelmed, remember the goodness of God. Yesterday, one of the things that we talked about is sometimes our burdens blind us to our blessings. Sometimes we really don't appreciate how blessed we are, because inside we're struggling so much, mentally, emotionally, psychologically. We're such a mess inside, and we feel such a crush from the weight of the burdens that we're bearing that we don't see clearly the blessings that we have in our lives. And I suggest to you a concept that I suggested yesterday. There's never a time in your life, never, and very seldom do I ever use universal terms, but there's never a time in your life when you're not more blessed than you're burdened. Now, you may not be feeling it. That may not be how your feelings are feeling, but that's the reality. That's how it always is. You're always blessed more than you're burdened. Just think more specifically. My wife was starving to death, literally, on July 11th of 2013. She had refused to have a feeding tube put in, and she was starving to death and dehydrated. She couldn't talk. I had to read her eyes. So frustrating. I said, "Honey, do you want me to make some mashed potatoes and try to get some mashed potatoes down you?" And reading her eyes, I thought she gave me an affirmative answer, so I rushed to the kitchen and made some mashed potatoes really quick, went back to the lift chair where she was sitting on that occasion, and I tried to begin to feed her. But she couldn't swallow it. She started crying. I started crying. I said, "Honey, do you want to get a feeding tube now?" And again, trying to read her eyes, it appeared she gave me an affirmative response. I immediately went and called 911 and had her picked up on July 11th. On July 12th of 2013, the surgery was performed where she was then blessed with a feeding tube. I took her home on July the 14th. And I will never forget standing in front of the stove and thinking, "I'll never eat inside this house again. I'll never have food brought inside this house again. I'll never cook in this house again as long as she lives," because I did not want her to smell what she could not eat. And then something dawned on me. All the years that we had been together, and I had led us in prayer, and we had thanked the Lord for the food that we were about to eat, never once, never once had I ever thanked the Lord for the ability to eat. I thought, what an ingrate I am. Have you ever thanked the Lord for the ability to walk? For the ability to get up out of bed? Do you know there are a lot of people who would love to have been able to do what you did this morning, just getting out of bed? When we think more specifically, we can become really deeply impressed with how blessed we are. And you know where those blessings come? They come from a God that's good. Now, he was struggling. Yes, David was really struggling. He was overwhelmed, but he did not forget the goodness of God, because look at verse 19. Oh, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you in the presence of the sons of men. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of man. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he has shown me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. Note in the Bible, often when characteristics of deity are mentioned, there are words attached to that characteristic that magnify the word. How great, note the adjective, how great is your goodness. And then notice there in verse 21, not just kindness, but marvelous kindness. It's the great goodness of God and the marvelous kindness of God that gives us every good and perfect gift in our life. James 1 in verse 17. Where my wife is buried, and likely I'll be buried at some point in time, in between our two names, there's a part of Nahum chapter 1, verse 7. The Lord is good. He's good. The Lord is good and a stronghold in day of trouble, and he knows those who take refuge in him. It's the goodness of God that blesses us with the abundance of the blessings we enjoy in our life. And there is never a time in your life, never a time in my life, when we are ever more burdened than blessed. We are always more blessed than we're burdened. My children grew up on Smurfs. Gargamel and Azrael were the arch enemies of the Smurfs. And one day, Gargamel and Azrael got all the Smurfs in a ring of fire. And as that fire rose about to cause the Smurfs to become toast, Papa Smurf, the wise one, said, "Sing with me, Smurfs, sing with me. I'll spare you the melody. I'll quote you the words. Goodness makes the badness go away. Goodness makes you happy every day. Badness cannot start if there's goodness in your heart. Goodness makes the badness go away." And the Smurfs sang that repeatedly, and the fire began to descend, and they were saved. I don't mean to suggest that thinking of the goodness of God will eliminate the badness in your life. I don't want to go that far, because that's not true. But what I do suggest to you, that no matter how bad your life is, there's never a time in your life where there's more badness than goodness. There's always more goodness. And the reason there's goodness is because there is a God in heaven who loves you and who cares about you and who will providentially work in your life to provide for you everything that you need in your life. And when you're not okay because your life is such a mess, please remember it's okay to not be okay, because you are human. Remember the goodness of God. Number three, wait on the Lord. At the end of the psalm, look at the last two verses. Oh, love the Lord, all his saints. For the Lord preserves the faithful and fully repays the proud person. Be of good courage. He shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. Other translations, wait on the Lord. Rosemary Whittle McKnight entered Fried Hardeman College at the same time I did, and at least a couple of other people who are here this morning, who are dear friends. And Rosemary's written some really good books. One of them is a book that's entitled Those Who Wait. And in that book, she studies that phrase, wait on the Lord or hope in the Lord. It's found over 20 times in the Bible. Powerful phrase. Really interesting study. I highly recommend her book. Maybe you've even sung this song at church here. Teach me, Lord, to wait. That's a hard thing to do, to wait on the Lord. You know, sometimes in our life, we're in situations where maybe the best thing for us to do is just accept the fact we're in the Lord's waiting room. And what's harder to accept is the fact we have no clue how long we're going to be there. But maybe we're like the cocoon that shouldn't be opened before it's time. Would you take an egg out of an incubator before it's time? There are reasons why, beyond our understanding, that we sometimes are in the Lord's waiting room. If after our dismissal this morning, after our Bible class, if you happen to go to a restaurant, you'll probably have a waiter. You know what waiters do? Waiters serve. Waiting on the Lord means you serve the Lord. You continue to serve the Lord. And sometimes in serving the Lord while you're in the Lord's waiting room can be the greatest growth time of your life. But I also concede it may be the most painful, most stressful time in your life as well. But the pain is worth the gain. The stress is worth the lesson. You know what we need in our life? Brother Edwin White, who wrote a book out in Phoenix, Arizona, a book called A Sense of Presence, he wrote a powerful section in that book, and I have copies of this that I periodically just read to myself because I need to keep reminding myself about this. Here is, I think, one of the most powerful things I've ever read outside the Bible. Here's what you need. When we reduce life to its essentials, only one thing is necessary: to have God. The noblest use of life is to spend it in the pursuit of the further knowledge of God, to use our lives in this way to embark on a journey that will find an answer to the question, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him." That's to begin an exciting quest that provides a lifetime of spiritual adventure. Those who pursue presence may or may not have quantity of years, but they will always have quality of days. If we live for this life only, for its frills and fluffs, for the parting pleasures and fleeting joys, then inevitably we will someday become frustrated with a life that hardly seems worth the price that we have paid to live it. Life spent in pursuit of baubles and bubbles ends in bitter disappointment. Baubles tarnish, bubbles burst. When we reduce life to its essentials, there is one thing that we need, and that is God. One of the most familiar passages in all the Bible that I call the Hobby Lobby verse in the Bible is at the end of Isaiah chapter 40, and I conclude with this remark. It's that one that says, "But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint." Go into Hobby Lobby and you can find some piece of home interior that has that inscribed on it. But oh, how I wish we could find a piece of home interior that has the context, because that's what's powerful. The context of that starts up in verse 28. And you really can't appreciate the last verse unless you begin reading at least as early as verse 28. "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the weak. To those who have no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall utterly fall. But those that wait on the Lord, see the context? Our God is an awesome God. He has a strength that is far beyond ours. He has an understanding that is unsearchable. What we need in our life is we need Him. That's the only thing that we need in our life is Him. If we have Him, we have all that we need, because a loving, providentially caring Father is always going to provide for us and care for us until we begin to enjoy His presence in a more intimate way on the other side. Life can be overwhelming to the point that you feel as if you're drowning. And when you're drowning, what do you need? You need somebody to save you. That's what God does. He's in the saving business. How long will you be in the Lord's waiting room and struggle with what you're struggling with in your life right now? I don't know. Nor does anyone else know. It might be to the point that you exit when you breathe your last breath. That's glory. If you exit that waiting room earlier, there's a word for that one too. It's grace. Enjoy the grace until we experience the glory. If you're struggling with some sin in your life right now, feel free to be transparent and share that struggle. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. We love Him because He loved us so much that He gave His own Son for our sin sacrifice, that we could be right in His sight. We could be holy as He is holy through that blood. There's no reason to bear the stress of that burden and the guilt and the weight of that guilt in our life a moment longer, because the Lord is in the saving business spiritually. If you need to come and confess your faith in Jesus and be baptized into Christ, the folks here will help you, love you, and support you, not just in that action, but in your walk with Him from that point forward. If you're struggling with something in your life right now and you need the prayers of others, again, let me remind you, it's okay to let other people know that you're not okay, that you're a mess, that you're overwhelmed, and that you need help. God help us to have a fellowship so deep, so personal, so strong, that we'll seek the help of others, because God often does His best work through us as we love one another. If you need to respond to the invitation, we encourage you to do that now. Please come while we stand and while we sing. In need.